the Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
Hi, this is Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 204. Hotter than July? Yes, August. This is Mary Tomich.
Tom Lawrence.
And out of the office today is Tony Bemis.
Yes.
he'll be rejoining us at some point in the not too distant
future.
He's
offline.
Yes, he is. He's
in the woods somewhere in a tent.
Looking for bears.
I don't know.
But anyway, the reason why we selected this episode name is because it is hotter than you know what.
Yes.
This has been a very, very hot summer. After the last couple of summers here in the Detroit area, which I would characterize as perfect, heavenly.
Yes.
You don't hear the word heavenly in Detroit in too many sentences.
No.
Same sentence that often. No. But the weather last summer, summer before, was just wonderful. Not so this summer.
And we've had a drought. That's the one thing I like, mm-hmm. though, because I have an acre of grass to cut, so the drought didn't bother me too much because the grass stopped growing. And people are like, what are you going to do with your brown lawn? I said, enjoy it.
It's tan.
It's got a wonderful tan.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's not dead. I mean, because a lot of times those lawns, you know, their root structure, they'll go dormant.
Yeah.
And there's been some rain, so.
We seed it a lot. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, we just walk because we didn't have to cut the grass. The seeding's easy. You just walk around and.
Why don't you just buy a truck of mulch?
Yeah,
mulch. Actually, one of my neighbors, what he did is, and it seems to be working out well because his lawn is very green. He's got this little clover stuff, and so it's not. He doesn't mow. It only gets a certain height, and it looks a very Irish green.
Oh.
And yeah, it's fantastic.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, so...
I laugh, my friend Naffy, he says, I don't understand you Americans and your fascination with lawn. He took his backyard, and it was really nice,
mm-hmm.
all cement from the entire backyard with an in-ground pool, and then his privacy fence...
With a cement pond.
With a cement pond. And his privacy fence, he... mounted like hanging plants and really beautiful. So the entire, you couldn't see the fence. The entire fence was a series of hanging plants,
wow.
and troughs like he made and put potted there. So you had this weird cement backyard, but you're surrounded by green. It was actually really nice looking, but he just says, I don't understand Americans and all this grass and this is work. He goes, I want pretty
either.
Flowers.
Well, you know, it sounds like it worked for him.
It did
work for him. So, all right, so let's catch up on
yes.
what the heck's been going on. All right, you first.
All right. So on the off topic of fun things, I've decided, because I love hot sauce, and anyone who's followed me on Facebook, social media knows I eat a lot of spicy foods, and so do me and all my employees. It's a work challenge for us to, you know, fix computers and eat habaneros, so or ghost peppers or Carolina Reapers. So we started making hot sauces.
California Reapers?
The Carolina Reapers.
Carolina Reapers.
That's because ghost peppers weren't hot enough. Someone went to that next level.
What is the hottest pepper known to humankind?
Currently, I think it's the Carolina Reapers is the hottest. They're insanely hot.
I have never heard of them.
I forget all the Scoville numbers, but you can't even measure jalapenos on the same level of hot. They're not even in the same category.
Jalapenos?
Yeah.
I like them.
I do, too. And I made a good jalapeno sauce.
I like pickled ones.
Yeah. We've been making lots of hot sauce, though. That's been my little fun little side project and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But back to what I've really been doing a lot of is more YouTube videos. I finally broke 1,000 subscribers. And it's kind of weird. So I hit 1,000 subscribers and immediately got another 100 after that. So... it's been kind of fun.
Probably YouTube rewarded you.
YouTube has
rewarded
me.
Here's a bonus 100 more that will subscribe for you without them knowing it.
Yeah, so I'm we'll throw you an extra 100. I think part of it has to do with the content. I've been working mm-hmm. on a lot more content, of course, and YouTube favorite content. So now I'm trying to post like 2 or 3 videos every week. And I'm always trying to look for what I should cover because I try to look for something that wasn't covered well or just wasn't covered at all.
Mm-hmm.
And like these new ubiquity.
I have a list for you.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff on there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's these new routers and stuff that came out. And I said, okay, how fast are they? Well, of course, the sales sheet says they're this fast. Well, that's not a real world thing. That's a sales sheet. So we started doing load testing.
Yeah, there's sales and then there's the real world.
Yeah. So we started doing load testing on it. We found not flaws, but we said, okay, it's only this fast. And if you turn the traffic manager on, which is one of the touted features, which is a cool feature, you almost lose 100 megs a second in speed when you're transmitting data across there. Now, granted, it's still faster at 233 megs per second processing. Most people don't have an internet connection that fast, so you haven't crippled it, you haven't broke it, but those are statistics that I wish they would just put on the box. Without the traffic analysis tool that we brag about turned on, we do 300 megs per second, and we drop down to 176 to 200 when you turn it on. But that's important information. And I just looked at the CPU and said, it can't process as fast as they're claiming. I think there's something to this. So
so you contacted them?
No, I just went and did a video and showed people how it works.
Oh, okay.
That's what I'm saying, and that's what we're doing is we're publishing all that on YouTube. And I'm going to get into a lot of this. We do that stuff anyways at my office. We load test before we put to a client because we understand the client's demands. We've been putting in some site-to-site wireless systems, and I just didn't want to buy the numbers. So we ordered stuff to test. Site-to-site wireless equipment, and then we load-tested it, and we couldn't simulate the distance in the building for interference, so we wrapped them up in more and more tinfoil to simulate distance.
So did you have an equation for the thickness of tinfoil equals another 500 feet or something? Or?
So it turns out the devices have a measurement tool that decides how far apart they are, so yes. We probably should have wrote down how much tinfoil. We just kept sticking tinfoil and things in between it until there. And I should have taken a picture. One of my employees goes, will it go through my head? And he stuck each of them to his head, which that was kind of funny.
That's funny. No, I mean, it is kind of funny. So, and then, of course, you run the danger when it's all, it looks like something you should put in the oven and bake.
Yes. Well, it's funny when he held to his head, I think it came up with 0.2 miles, and he goes, I have 0.2 miles of thickness in my head. Because these are specific Wi-Fi devices by Unify are supposed to work line of sight. Uh-huh. So anything in between them causes them to start calculating a distance.
Okay,
so,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Overall, those devices I'm super impressed with. And I'm still impressed with the other device because even though it can only route traffic at this 200 megs a second, which is still fast for most internet connections, the device is $49. So for $49, that's actually cheaper than you can go buy a big router for that's not going to do any better.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I say big router, but a
big router.
Yeah, big router. What I mean is like a consumer one, like a Linksys or a Netgear, Best Buy type stuff, not anything commercial. Commercial ones are way faster. And of course, I broke it down and compared it to pfSense. I said pfSense can route with, I forget which processor, but if you had a quad-core processor or a modern one in a pfSense box, you're going to get like 900 megs a second in routing. So.
Wow.
Yeah, without a problem.
Wow. Well, that sounds like it kept you pretty busy.
Yeah. That's
And a little bit of fun.
Yes.
I have to check and see if I subscribe to your YouTube channel. I kind of think I don't.
Oh. I had requests, and you know,
I'll have to do that.
I did this at PenguinCon. I did those Linux basic tutorials.
Okay.
And they went really well at PenguinCon. I never thought to really do it, and someone messaged me and asked me if I'll do some of those on there because I had just shown people how to do command line.
Sure.
And, of course, I made it fun by piping everything into Kausei.
Sure.
Because who wants to just see results on the screen?
If you get a cow to say it.
You get the cow to say all your results. And I should have used Kausei when I was doing the test, like pipe everything to Kausei for the test, for the speed test. Your router's operating at 212 megs per second. Cow says.
Oh, yeah, those kind of things are kind of fun. I mean, and I don't want to jump ahead to our next episode, but the distro that I will be reviewing in the Fresh Looks episode, they have a talking version so that, and it's for the visually impaired Linux user. So it's kind of fun because what it'll do is whatever you're doing on the keyboard, it's going to it repeats it. So I'm thinking to myself, it'd be kind of fun to set up some kind of a statement that it says, and it says it in that very robotic, voice. And anyway, but when you said the Kausei thing, it kind of reminded me of that.
So. Yeah, no, that's funny.
Well, so it sounds like you were busy.
Busy, and hiding from the heat. You know, we're indoors, like I said. As the show title announced, it's really hot and wet in Michigan, so I'm hiding.
Yeah, so even though we had a drought, it's humid, and we did get some good rain yesterday.
Yeah, we had a monsoon.
Yes.
All the rain for the last couple months came yesterday.
Yeah, it did. It did. And so for me, I'm happy to announce that I turned my Linux workstation back on. You know, it was off for a month because our third floor is being completely redone. And that has concluded. Now it's putting everything back. First thing I set up, of course, is my Linux machine, and that was just good to have that back because, you know, I have been using Windows simply because my daytime software, it only runs on Windows, so I use that. But it was just wonderful to get back into the Linux world as kind of the environment, or FreeBSD, which is what I'm using on my laptop. So that was kind of the big thing, and the home tours and three, 4 weeks.
So you ready for it? Like it's all...
We will be.
Okay.
Not ready yet.
Your office is back together, though.
Yeah. Well, my second floor, I have two offices.
Oh, okay.
I have my fun office, and then I have my business office. And my business office looks like a kind of a steampunk retro office.
Oh, cool.
So, it just looks kind of interesting. But, yeah, so it's slowly coming back. And so that was the exciting thing. And the city of Detroit was very fast in doing their inspection. I know. I know. And the project manager contacted me and said, I can't believe how quickly they're coming out to inspect. I said, wow, me neither.
Detroit, and I was just at an SBA meeting, and I got to meet some interesting people, including the head of the SBA who's in Obama's cabinet. She was really cool to talk to. But one of the things they did was Detroit was one of the pilot cities for this. They call it businesses in a day, but they basically assist Detroit and a lot of other cities, but they take the city planning departments and the inspection departments and they make them better. They look at everything in best practice.
Well, apparently it's working.
Yes. Well, because one of the challenges of businesses, and it probably affects homes in a slightly different way, but they get to benefit from this, is when you go to open a business and they tell you, hey, it's going to take us like 4 months to get you inspected. It's going to have to schedule this.
Well, that's a business killer.
Yeah, and it's become one of the challenges of businesses in Detroit is getting open. And even in my city in Taylor, it took us months to open, fighting with the city, and it took me another year after it opened to get the signs I wanted because the city just drags their feet on any type of approvals. So they're actually fast-tracking a lot of that, and they're going into cities going, what are you guys doing? Why is it taking so long? And they have like a template going, this is the rules you should follow to make it go faster.
Oh, that's kind of nice. I mean, at least you then know much sooner what you need to do.
Good. So we understand that we need conformity and rules, but we also don't need them to take 4 months to tell me what the hell I need to do.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear you. So anyway, but yeah, that's pretty much my stuff. So
Coming along. I'm going to stop by the home tour. Sis.
Well, you know, I mean, you should, or you can come over and just get the tour of my house.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I'm interested. You got all that cool magic stuff.
Yeah, Well, I'm thinking people come up on my third floor, they're just going to freak out because I had a lot of carnival weird crap.
I love that stuff, though.
I know you do. So do I. But, you know, I have some of my neighbors are conservative. Well, we'll see what happens. If they can't deal with it, they'll run screaming from my house. Just the way it goes. So I guess that's it for catch up. So we don't know what Tony was doing. Camping.
Yeah, he's camping.
I haven't seen anything from him. You may have seen something, maybe.
Yeah, he called me. I endorsed his dog on LinkedIn as part of a scavenger hunt.
You endorsed his dog?
Yeah.
On LinkedIn.
His dog has a profile.
What does his dog do for a living?
I forget, but it was something really funny.
Barks, eats, and sleeps.
Comforts humans, I think, is what the endorsement I gave. Tony is participating in some type of online scavenger
hunt.
Not a
fur baby.
Yes.
Does he have a dog?
Yeah. Don't you remember?
Oh, yeah. That little thing.
Yeah, you're right. It's so small.
That fur baby.
It's like a teacup poodle or I don't know. It is not a dog. It is a tiny little thing that yips and jumps.
Yeah. And I'm sure somebody loves it. No, I'm just kidding. We love it. We love it. I haven't seen that dog, though, since we moved. We moved to this incredible studio.
With no dogs.
With no dogs. All right. Oh, there's a joke there, but I'm going to go right by it.
All right.
I guess we're going to move on to listener feedback.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
All right.
Did you see any listener feedback?
Yes. Let me make sure.
Because I had never mind.
The one I see here is from Will. I have subscribed to your show on iTunes and AntennaPod, which I hadn't heard of. Mm-hmm. And in both cases, the show notes and episodes are not very helpful. For example, in the last two shows, and he breaks down, it looks like it's only pulling the header. And Will, we are definitely going to look into this. I'm going to email him back today. He actually sent that last night, I think. Anyways, what I'm going to do is I want to look at the plugins we're using in WordPress. And Tony told me to go ahead and just change whatever needs to be changed. Mm-hmm. I think we have a few things that are not pulling the headers properly, so it doesn't populate the show notes in the different podcasting apps.
Oh, okay.
Because they're scraping the data to pull the show, but I think they're doing it. Yeah.
Don't you mean they're scraping the bottom of the barrel? No.
They're scraping the wrong part of the data.
Okay.
But I think there's probably some plugins I'm gonna dig into. The nice thing is with like WordPress plugins, there's probably a couple of them that are specific to podcasts. And
sure.
I'm going to look at the spec on them. And I'm also looking to see if there's some – maybe there's that new Google tool called AMP. And I think there's some WordPress plugins for that. And what it does is it takes out all the graphics and creates very clean text for pulling information and summary. So I'm going to look at how we're doing some of it. I also need to modify because I'm helping Tony out while he's been gone and doing editing. But I told Tony I'm going to take this as an opportunity to rewrite the editing process because the problem is like Tony's been doing it for so long and he just it becomes like this is the process I do.
It's second nature to him and if somebody else wants to do it.
So I'm looking at things and I find out what are complicated about the audio editing process and we're going to redo it. And my plan again is to post it on YouTube like we discussed a little bit before the show. There's nothing proprietary or secret about what we do and maybe this would help others or maybe someone will look at it and go, Tom, you're an idiot and you shouldn't do it this way. either way.
Or Tony, you're an idiot for doing it this way for so long. No, just kidding.
Yeah.
Tony, we're kidding.
Does Tony listen to the show afterwards? I don't know.
Let's not say anything. Let's just see if he says anything to us.
Yes.
So, Tony, if you're listening, I'll buy you coffee. There you go.
There's your listener feedback.
All right. And anybody else listening, don't tell him. He's got to find out himself. All right. So thanks for the listener feedback.
Yep. I think that was the only – yeah. There was a there was another email. It wasn't exactly listener feedback, but Door-to-Door Geek had messaged us about Lewis Rossman. He has a YouTube channel, and he had a video editing challenge, so he kind of messaged us about it. And what that was about was Lewis Rossman said he'd pay for a really good Linux video editor. He loves Linux, but one of his problems is that. And I actually ended up messaging Lewis back and forth on this, and it's kind of funny.
I'll pay for a really good one, too.
Yeah. Well, what it came down to was he's right, and I told him he's still right. I told him Caden Live has improved. But
it crashes.
Yes.
I don't know why it's been crashing lately. And I think they set up a GoFundMe type drive a few years ago, and I contributed to it. And
I think Linux video editing is a very complicated system.
Yeah.
And there are certain reproducible things. Like one of the dumb problems I have to deal with is when I'm adding overlays. So if I add an overlay and I drag it, sometimes it locks. And once an overlay locks to I think it's 5 seconds, you can't change the time on it.
Oh.
And it's a reproducible known problem. It's a reported bug. The only solution is, this is stupid, you save it and reopen it, and then you can drag it whenever you want. Mm-hmm. But once it decides it wants to do it, you can't change how long an overlay. Like if I overlay text on the bottom, it gets stuck at 5 seconds.
I learn to save frequently.
Yeah. So there's things, and I told Lewis, I said, I muddle my way through it, and I report all the bugs because I would love to see it get better, and it'll never get better if no one uses it and no one reports any type of repeatable bug. The problem is the non-repeatable bugs are really aggravating. But I've gotten, because I know which ones are, like the dragging thing, I've got workarounds, so I'm just saving and reloading, and I don't have too many problems with it. My YouTube channel is 100% produced by Caden Live, except for the earliest videos, which I use OpenShot for. And OpenShot, at the time, just didn't have the features, so I switched to Caden Live.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. It just seems to have gotten a little buggier for me.
It's still not perfect. That's for sure.
Yeah, unfortunately, but when it works well. I really like it. It's easy to use, and it's got some nice features to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just have learned to save frequently.
Save frequently. So. And that's what we're going to be using to edit our podcast.
Okay.
So, but it works for audio. Okay. It actually seems to have no issues at all because audio is much less complicated to edit. So, all right. Well, now we're done with listener feedback.
Okay.
And Caden Live Talks.
That's right. So, we're moving on to
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
All right. That's right. Distro Fever.
Yes.
And we're just in a fever, and we don't even need distros because it's so hot.
Yes.
All right. So, did you get a chance to take a look at these? And
we got free BSD 11 RC1. I know. RC1.
I've been sitting on the edge of my chair waiting for the final version to come out. I really should check their schedule. I think it's going to probably be out, probably in the next 30 days, maybe. Maybe.
Maybe.
You know what caught my eye? Black Panther. Now, this particular distro has been around for a while, but it was originally forked from Mandriva.
Hmm.
And it's kind of now its own independent, but it still carries some of the legacy from Mandriva. But I got a kick out of their release name. It's called Silent Killer. I thought that's all we need.
That's
oh
what we
need. My goodness! So yeah, so that that is out there, and actually, they're, you know, what they said is they're able to keep that on a CD still. I mean, most full featured distros go to DVD just because of the size, but this one they've managed to keep it kind of slim, and then of course. Ghost BSD, which tracks FreeBSD fairly closely, they're out with their RC1, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, all the BSDs are, you know, going to be just
very active. Yeah, when FreeBSD comes out, we'll see a. It's kind of like when Red Hat comes out, we see all those Red Hat based ones.
Yeah,
that
those are the big jump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what else caught my eye?
So that's pretty much.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot of news in there.
No, you know, one thing I was thinking about when I was looking at it, I think yesterday, is that, well, it's in that time, that month, you know, August tends to be one of those slow months. It's the end of summer, and people are on vacation. I think that happens, not the entire continent of Europe goes on vacation, but I think things kind of slow down in August.
Yeah.
So, and I think we're seeing that here. And as a matter of fact, we'll cover Linux conventions a little later. My list has one.
Your list has one?
Yeah. So it just goes to show how quiet it is in August. So.
Yeah. Well, we had Black Hat. That created all kinds of, you know, the hacker conferences.
Oh, yes.
I mean, those.
Yes.
The hacker conferences create some noise. But that's going to be in the news topics. So.
Okay. Good. I'll be ready for that. All right,
moving on
to
Tech News and Views.
Okay, news.
News.
News, views.
News,
what do you
views?
Got to lose?
What do you got to lose?
Your dignity.
Well, you could lose your TCP route if you've seen that giant headline about Linux.
You know, I think I missed it. I must have been moving furniture.
You might have been moving furniture.
So do tell me.
So it's the TCP off-path TCP exploit. I'm mixed on this one. So yes, it's a flaw. But let's talk about the big picture of this flaw. First, the flaw was introduced through RFC 5961, which was a change in the way TCP does the ACK. It was actually supposed to secure it. This was introduced in 2012.
I got you. Yep.
And only one distribution of TCP stack fixed it. the Linux distribution. Microsoft skipped it.
We
Mac
knew
skipped
that.
It.
We knew that.
So yeah, you know, so we went and put it in.
Oh wait, did FreeBSD fix it?
No, I don't think they did it either.
How about OpenBSD? They would have. They probably wouldn't even had it available. Well,
they actually broke the TCP stack by following the RFC. See, other places didn't follow it.
I gotcha.
And by following it, the way it was said to be implemented, it was put into the Linux kernel back in 2012. Then someone found a flaw in it. Now, what it allows you to do is, it's like a man in the middle attack, but you don't have to be in the middle.
You don't have to be a man.
You don't have to be a man either. It's a person in the middle attack. Okay. I seen there's a call to change that. I've seen a lot of Twitter comments about that. But what you can do is you can hijack a session by sending reset packets to the destination, and it would bring basically between two different computers, they're communicating. You could start sending reset packets from your location, which is not in between those two locations,
and
it would start hijacking and sending you their data because they didn't set a limit for how many reset packets and ACK packets that can be sent. So it's kind of a weird problem. But this is where I don't like the news and the headlines. Now, because it was implemented in Linux, they got picked on, but any of the other stacks could have implemented this and had the same flaw. They never – the flaw in Linux is they implemented but didn't put a rate limit on there because you should say, hey, after a couple of them, you're clearly a third party trying to hijack a session, so quit sending all these packets. Like, you've hit your limit.
It's kind of like logging into a site. You try to log in four times or whatever, and you're cut off. You can't
– Right. And so they didn't do that. So that is where Linux implemented it, but followed the spec, but didn't hit that because the spec didn't say you had to set a limit. So they didn't set a limit. No one thought about this as an attack vector. So there's that. But this is the part where the news ran wild with it, and it made me angry because it got off topic and tried to put fear into it. Top sites vulnerable. No. USA Today is vulnerable to this attack. Correct. USA Today is not a top site for one.
Who's going to say?
I don't know
USA Today
where they
top
fall.
Site? No.
No. And the reason they chose USA Today is not because they're a top site, but because they don't use SSL. They don't enforce SSL on their site. So I love how they actually comment, well, the mitigation to this is security.
It's turning off the internet.
Well, they're like, wait a minute. Security is on for all the top sites. Google, SSL, Facebook. SSL, like everyone's using secure layer on all the actual top sites. Even when you go to a lot of other news sites, because security certificates are so cheap and, well, technically free if they're using Let's Encrypt, tons of these sites have all moved towards SSL. This attack gets you nothing. So if you redirect the traffic and it's SSL, you just got a pile of encrypted traffic. It doesn't give you any insight other than you'll know that the traffic is secure. So first, in order to do this attack, someone has to be using an insecure protocol. So they're trying to tell you that it's like this end of the world scenario and Linux is bad because blah, blah, blah. But I'm like, well, who's not using security now? I didn't know until I read the article and started digging into the IRC and really researching. I'm like, oh, USA Today doesn't use SSL, and I don't know why. And they're not a top site. So the attack is more news than actual fear. And people
get people to click on that headline.
Yeah. I mean, come on, Ars Technica. They disappointed me with that they actually made it like a big news story. And I'm like, it's not as bad as people say. It's not like we had to run. I mean, they already have a patch very quickly. There's even for people who can't update their kernels, there are some mitigations that someone came up with of setting rate limits and adding some features to firewalls to stop it. So not a big deal. It needs to be fixed. It's a big deal a little bit, like you should fix it, but it's not a big deal like run around with their head on fire like these news was top sites affected. No, that should not have been the headline.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, as I said, it gets people to click on it.
It's more, yeah.
It got you to click on it. I'm sure if I saw it, I would be clicking on it.
Well, I did. It's a top site. And then I see USA. Why did they choose USA? I don't ever go to USA Today. And I just don't think of them as one. You see the top sites of the internet. That doesn't come up in my head. USA. No, Facebook is definitely at the top of the sites. Now, if this flaw were to affect SSL, then run around, light your hair on fire and run. It would make sense.
Yeah, that would be that would be something. All right.
On more positive news.
There is some?
Yes. The police force in Lithuania have switched to LibreOffice.
I was looking for that news item myself because I had seen that and thought, hey, I want to talk about that.
Yes.
So I saw that.
8,000 workstations. That's a pretty good number. So they've moved over 8,000 workstations to LibreOffice, and they are now testing using – because they're still running on Windows, and they're testing switching over to Ubuntu desktops. So I thought that was definitely pretty cool.
Yep.
And we're seeing that trend more and more in Europe. We're slower to adopt it here because we have the world of Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was an article we had talked about, and there was some follow-up on it. I dug into one of these articles or some commentary that led to some links. In Munich, they had switched, but the mayor hated the switch, so they're slowly being lured back into the world of Microsoft because some of the German places have tried it. But it's going to come because I think Microsoft's even realizing they have to switch to things as a service rather than software. And yeah, but when, you know, Lithuania, that's 8,000 workstations is nice. That's a nice switch over there.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't know about this, and maybe you do because you work in the financial world, but have you heard of Hyperledger?
Is that the block?
Yeah.
Okay. I have been reading about the whole blockchain thing, but I'm not familiar with Hyperledger.
So Hyperledger is a blockchain, and you've got some big companies, I think IBM, JP Morgan, Wells Fargo, London Stock Exchange, Moscow Stock Exchange. Open source software project, the blockchain, global online ledger that underpins Bitcoin digital currency, referring what blockchain is, the project to build a blockchain-like software that can efficiently, reliably, openly track the exchange of financial assets, including stocks, bonds, futures, houses, car titles. Now, I really love this concept, and the really big companies are getting involved in it. And if you're familiar with how blockchain works, and this is we should probably do a whole fresh look because I'd love to have a in-depth discussion about blockchain.
Yeah, and because a few weeks ago there was an article about the financial markets and the and banks and their move toward this, and I did read up on blockchain and just so that I personally could have a bit better understanding about it because, you know, Bitcoin, I'm certainly familiar with it, but I have no intention of using it, especially after, I don't know if you saw in the news, and I don't mean to divert the conversation here, but just for a second, there was some Bitcoin, repository was hacked.
Yes.
And people have, there's no FDIC.
No. If you lose your money, you lose your money.
Yeah. So I'm thinking to myself, you know, I'm going to stick with, the standard thing for now. And once the FDIC insures it, hey, I'm in.
Right.
So anyway, but.
No, but what the concept in general of the blockchain is, it's a ledger. Now, because computers, the way they work now, you can have a single ledger shared in a distributed system. So everyone has a copy of the ledger. And with the ledger, for example, and they said car titles to bring it to something really simple, when there's a transfer of title, you then can transfer it within the blockchain. And the way any transfer in a blockchain is done is it verifies the entire blockchain. It looks at every transaction, the entire history of transactions, and just adds one more transaction with an encrypted hash. This only takes a few minutes to do, and you're done. It's now in the permanent ledger that the car title that once belonged to Mary was transferred to Tom. Permanent ledger.
And how are you liking that car, by the way?
Yeah. So these permanent ledgers make things like financial. Yeah. So if I want to transfer securities, I suddenly can do it. Now, what's really cool, the blockchain is publicly readable by everyone. So there's good and bad with it. The good, it's publicly readable by everyone.
The bad is tough to launder money.
Yeah, tough to launder money. The bad is it's publicly readable by everyone. And when everyone is those financial institutions and you can verify it. So basically no two things could ever be sold twice using this. So it's a really great concept. So you can't try to do this sale. And if people have tried this by hacking with Bitcoin, because there's a couple minute delay between I want to sell this with a Bitcoin and the actual transaction, they've tried to do the timed attacks where they sell the same block twice before the blockchain does. Now, there are the blockchain way the mathematics are implemented, it won't actually happen. But what some places do is they'll accept the payment now, and they fix a lot of these flaws early in there. They accept the payment now and wait a few minutes for the blockchain to catch up. That few minutes is enough. But now what they would do, and I don't know how long it takes to assure that a security has been exchanged, but they said that one of the things they talked about was in the financial industry, there's a lot more verification, so a lot more time. This would eliminate that because the blockchain can't be hacked or tampered with because it's mathematics.
So and you would it's just shared, have, too.
It's shared.
So that, I mean, it would be very difficult. And that was one of my takeaways from the series of articles I read is the fact that there's just that greater reliability because of that sharing and that everybody's got that copy.
Everyone has a copy and everyone can go, yes, I seen that this financial security transferred from this person to this person. That means they own it now. So that person can't try to sell it to me. And it happens within minutes, which is probably faster than how it's happening now in the financial industry. Because right now we expect in normal finances, like if we swipe a credit card, we want it all in seconds. That's where Bitcoin's had a hard time. You can't use it to – it makes it harder to go buy something with it taking more time to process a transaction. Because if someone stands at my counter at my store for 2 minutes waiting for something to verify, they're tapping their fingers because we're like we swipe and run. Here's the credit card.
Swipe and run.
So
yeah, there's some people that use that method.
I thought it was kind of a cool concept, though.
It was. And I it'll be kind of interesting to see how it evolves over the next, few years.
Yeah. So we'll see. That's it. Definitely a neat way to go because it becomes more open. We released the federal source code policy, the People's Code, in at the U.S. government. Now, there's some loopholes in it. As because it's
I'm
written
surprised.
By politicians.
Yes.
But in the concept where it's moving our government slowly to when they contract code to be written, that it actually can become public domain, some of the code is. And it encourages more code sharing between the different departments, which is great because I think we'd had a deeper discussion about this it was 7 months ago where I said, hey, every water department in every city is pretty much the same, but they all buy individual software. Why not have one open source project that propagates throughout the entire – because every city has the same basic
set of functions.
And then
you can have plugins depending on what you're
– Yeah, if there's some customization. Well, home inspections, you can have your rules, but the general home inspection process, if it was ran in open source, is the same for the city of Detroit as it is for – the city of Boston or any other city. There's a series of rules that should be a standard form. You just modify the details of your rule for buildings can't be this tall or that tall.
Yeah. And I flunked my final plumbing inspection.
Oh.
There was a Studevent. Are you familiar with that?
Yep.
I had never heard of it. I heard of a Studebaker, but not a Studevent.
Studevent? Studevent, I think is how you say them. But you need it for the drains because you don't have a properly vented pipe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep. And so when the inspector came out and saw that, he said, oh, everything else looks good, but you got to have this. So the plumber had to come back, I think it was on Thursday, whenever it was, came back, put it in, took up even more space in my little vanity that
– Yeah.
Because that's a tiny bathroom.
Yeah. So, and then the stupid little thing's going to go off there. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, but – so much for that.
Yeah, because the old houses didn't have the vent pipe that goes all the way to the top. They just thought gurgling was how it was supposed to go down.
Yeah. Yeah, so, but, with that increased efficiency we spoke of earlier, I could see how having kind of a standardized approach and software for these type, that type of, the administration of it, the tracking and all of that, just would be good.
Well, I think it also, and I'm not clear on how it works at some of these top levels, but when the government goes to replace programs, a lot of times they have to replace them because they had code written, that company doesn't exist, or no one, it's in COBOL, and they got to, there's no way to do it. If you have all the source code, you can constantly be looking at it, retweaking and recompiling it, so the code can evolve easier without the need of the vendor if you have some internal programmers.
Yeah.
So I think there's, conceptually, I think it's a good thing. You know, it made me think of it. I don't think as much about this because we've always run my business on open source, but my point of sale system, we had to make some more modifications to features we wanted to add. So we just added them. We don't have to wait on a vendor. I just open up Terminal and start coding. So it makes it a lot easier.
Cool.
The secure boot snafu from Microsoft.
Oh, I think I saw something about that. I didn't take time to really dive in and read
it. It's another one where I think the headlines are a little overbloated, but security through obscurity is bad. Basically, Microsoft, through a series of policies, managed to, with the anniversary update, somehow leak partial keys for the EFI bootloader that keeps Linux off of some of the desktops and keeps signed applications only to Microsoft on in for the mm-hmm. BIOS. Now, the thing is, and after I did some deeper reading, and if someone knows something different, correct me if I'm wrong on this, it sounds like a great headline that Microsoft leaked the secret keys, but they only released them on ARM devices and not on the full Windows laptops okay. and things like that. So you can now, it does open the door to modifying like the Surface tablets, the real-time ones that were based on ARM, but to my knowledge doesn't do anything for people running x86 and cracking UEFI mm-hmm. there. But it's still the fact that there's secret keys sitting at Microsoft that as long as they don't leak, we're all safe, is a horrible idea. That's just, you know, that's security through we hope no one ever copies these keys to the open world. That's not.
Well, and you know that's going to happen.
Especially if you accidentally do it through an update.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, yeah, that kind of did put some keys in there. I forget the exact method by which you acquired them. It was some complicated stuff that went on. Mm-hmm. But you're still relying on one secret key that unlocks all the things. That's not good. So Cory Doctorow, one of my heroes, and the EFF, in sending some letters to the FTC to make a strong case that DRM requires truth in labeling. So this is pretty neat. So the EFF has taken on – they want to know people because they always use marketing speak to package mm-hmm. DRM as a way to secure and make your life better when the reality is it protects the interests of these companies in a way that locks you out of your own media. And then one of the famous ones was Sony. Sony, when they sold their music devices years ago, and they didn't do wonderful with them, but one of the things Sony had was they put all that DRM in that backdoored people's computers.
Oh, I remember
yes.
that.
Yes. And then to top it off, when Sony shut down the site and finally –
such bad feelings as they created in their customer. I mean, because I think that if I see something with Sony and I see something with another vendor, I'll get it from the other vendor just yeah. because – Sony just blew that trust.
You gotta remember, Sony had the Walkman. Sony, if they would have followed a better business model, mm-hmm. would have went from the Walkman to the iPod. Think about that.
Yeah.
They were positioned in the market to completely dominate that market because the Sony Walkman was synonymous with portable music. So you would have walked that market, but they completely kept missing it. And having a lot of problems. And of course, they went as far to their crazy DRM. And of course, the final nail in their coffin was if you bought Sony Music, they shut down their music authorization DRM. So anyone who bought it couldn't reactivate it again. Even though you paid for it and purchased all this music, you lost access to it because they shut that down.
I'm sorry. That just, never mind. It just pisses me off.
And it does. And this is why the EFF is getting involved in this, going, they're trying to package mm-hmm. DRM as a benefit to the consumer, when the reality is we have nothing but examples of the consumer getting not the good side of it.
Yeah, that's true. Because, you know, in their attempt to fight this group, you know, these groups that – and I think most purchasers or most people who own music own it legitimately.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we end up getting punished because of a few that – break the rules.
Break the rules. And it, in reality, is no one was stopped by the Sony DRM. So it only protected people who actually played by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
So none of those songs were actually protected.
Yeah.
So I have that. The last thing I want to cover in the news is servers stuck in airplane mode, Delta.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before we start recording, you know, I flew Delta last week, Sunday, and I'm happy to say that was the day before.
Yeah. You're like the last flight before they had to take a break.
Yeah, I landed, I think I landed about 14 hours before that thing went down.
Yeah, the jokes are flying. Delta engineers are
the jokes are flying. Delta wasn't.
Yes, Delta was not. The engineers were in the brace position. All the sysadmins were having a really bad day.
Oh, my God.
Don't know every detail. There have been repeated requests, but under the NDAs and all the people who still want to keep their jobs, no one has really stepped up forward and officially said, I work at Delta and here's what went on. But from what we have gathered from Reddit and a few other sources is it was a data center switchover problem. Now, the data centers didn't switch over and the part burned up essentially. It caused a small fire, so they had to turn everything off. And now this is where and you'll understand when I, we talked about this for a show and I said, explain this. A lot of their stuff, a couple of people said they did work for Delta previously and are pretty sure everything's still the same inside. And I completely believe a company as old as Delta, probably this is true. Mm-hmm. They, all their stuff is still modeled off of the IBM mainframe S390 architecture. Now they're running on modern hardware, but they're still running a lot of that software design and architecture off of old mainframe style.
So they basically are running like an emulator that will allow this to work?
Yeah, it's kind of the overall, my understanding of it. Like they've modified it to work on newer hardware, but it's still kind of a legacy system. Now, if you take a modern system from day one, like, you know, if you're developing something new, you've got Docker, you have scalability designed into any new modern application. But you can't easily switch an old application to that modern scalable architecture.
Just think if they didn't give snacks out, they might be able to update this.
They save enough money. Save a few more peanuts.
Wait, I like my snacks. They started distributing. Well, and I don't think, I'm not trying to point out just Delta, but I mean, I think some airlines, they had stopped with the snacks and then they started up again. You know, it helps when you're, you know, if you're delayed, because I ended up in North Dakota.
Well, you don't want to be
there.
Because
of storms in Minneapolis. Oh. Yeah, it was sunny and flat.
Yeah, there's not a lot there.
No, we were there for an hour, then we flew back.
You've seen all of it, the entire state in 1 hour.
No, it's actually, it's very spacious. I mean, it's, and I say that in a positive way. Mm-hmm. It's just very wide open. It's really quite impressive.
Yeah. But because of all their legacy, I guess it was really hard for them to switch over. And this always comes to the point for any of these older companies where newer companies without having that legacy, when they start up, they have some immediate advantages.
Sure.
It's really hard to do the switch. It's very time consuming. But when you start from the ground up, I'm starting a company today. I'm going to base it on today's architecture. Today's architecture is scalable and can be placed in several data centers and load balanced. And they're, as I understand, a lot of their system doesn't have that. And of course, as we proved, they're 100% dependent on their system, including, as I understand, internal communications. Like, so they had a hard time getting information out because when the data center went down, they also couldn't talk to people. And it just.
I don't mean to laugh, but it just, you know.
Yeah, it's like, oh.
Just one thing leads to another.
Yeah, because now we can't tell them the data center's down. They just know nothing works. And of course, if you try and call the help desk, I think. Because the help desk, the primary one was in Atlanta.
Twitter was working, though. Twitter was working overtime.
Twitter
was
working overtime. The jokes were flying. Oh, my goodness. Hashtag Delta. And yeah. So that's what I have for the news. But yeah, I'd love if someone would give an analysis of what went on there. Like if Delta, I know PR would handle it and probably cut it down.
Very
but I'd
vague
like
to, general terms.
But I'd like to know. I think they would be, you get better love from the consumer when you communicate. Even if you know you messed up, the companies that come back from I goofed up are the ones that actually admit publicly, we goofed up.
And here's what we're doing to fix it.
That, yeah.
See, I think most consumers would buy into that.
Yeah.
And just say, well, I appreciate them being honest and here's what they're doing to prevent that from happening again. So then you feel more confident flying with them, knowing that, that their data center is not going to have a failover.
Unless the truth is it could happen again and we didn't do anything.
we just faked it with you.
Yeah. This problem could happen again tomorrow.
Well, yeah. I mean, anything could.
So. Yeah. A lot of people are pointing towards hacking and things like that. And I'm like,
Well, here's the thing.
It's potential, but.
I kind of went there though because, and the only reason why I went there is because the previous month, Southwest whole system was shut down. Mm-hmm. And then this month, Delta's whole system was shut down. And so I kind of I didn't jump to the conclusion. I thought, I wonder if it was hacking, because it just seems so odd that you had one airline, then another airline.
So this is, you can never underestimate groups of people doing dumb things. So,
that's true.
Oh, and one little topic I wanted to talk, it's not in my notes, but, the census that happened in Australia. Did you hear about the boondoggle that was that?
No.
So they had a whole online census system that went completely down and turned into a total disaster. The companies involved Just basically, like, if they could have screwed up, they completely screwed up.
No, just a little bit of background as far as an online census system. This was to replace the census taker that comes around and collects information about how many people, blah, blah,
Yeah. I didn't get into some of that detail. Like, I know that's what it was for.
Okay.
How they implemented, like, to make sure each person was individually doing it. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But of course, they tried to put some restrictions in because it was an Australia census. They made sure they were even geography restricting, so they didn't have external people even able to access the site.
Oh, okay.
So they did. They thought they did some mitigation, but apparently internally they did not configure DNS servers properly. They had bad TTLs on them. They had all kinds of little things
that collectively
caused it. Now this is where it gets even crazier. They had a really minor denial of service attack came from inside of Australia, so they were already threat mitigating from outside Australia. They put all the servers on the same segment, so it made it a little bit easier to start taking the servers down. But this is where things went really off the charts. And this, if you look up the Risky Business podcast, they covered this in detail because they're from Australia.
Okay.
So they seen all the logs filling up and going back to IBM, and they thought they'd been, now they didn't know they were going back to IBM. They seen first a DNS service. They reset a DNS server and a firewall. They forgot to sync the firewalls, so it shut down the system. And then the logs started flying back to IBM. So they seen data leaving the center, but not realizing it was their own logs going out of the system. So they thought they'd been owned, and they called in the government for security mitigation. They shut the entire operation down to break down what was going on. They're like, oh, it's your logs. It's completely a false positive. Like, you noticed your own data and thought someone was in your data center.
You silly people.
But once they called in and shut it down, apparently they have to finish the investigation, even though it looks like everything was a false positive. But as they covered it in better detail than that, and it was a calamity of errors. It's so, as much as people were thinking it was being hacked by Chinese hackers, and I guess even was it their prime minister come out there and said no, it was, he called them out for just stupidity. He's like, this, because I think IBM was the one contracted to do this. And it just, everything went wrong. Mm-hmm. And but everyone's like, is it Chinese hackers? Is it because Australia beat someone in some Olympics game? And they're like, no, this is just like pure dumb happened.
Speaking of that, did you hear what the U.S. Women's soccer team? Well, you know, they lost and they're out of medal contention, which is unfortunate. And then the goalie, Hope Solo, she said that the Swedish team, who beat the U.S. team, they played like cowards.
Mm.
It was terrible. What a terrible thing to say.
Wow.
Anyway, sorry, I digressed there, but that just irritated me.
There's a lot of little things. We could have a whole Olympic rant one. That's a different show, though.
The green pool.
The green pool was awesome.
I've heard of green screens. Can you imagine if they had that? Well, you could take that green pool.
I thought it was an advertising ploy because I thought that's what they were going to do with it.
Yeah. Use it as like a green screen and put big sharks in there. And
I scroll past most of the Olympic news, but I seen the green pool and I'm like, I just thought it was a tech thing. I'm like, are they going to overlay ads on the pool?
No.
Yeah,
algae.
Algae ads. Yeah. So.
Oh my gosh.
What do you got for the news?
Well, you've covered a lot. I've got a couple things. There's a new version of Gparted that was just released on the 2nd of August, and it's Gparted's been around for years, and they're just at 0.26.
It's such a good tool, too.
It is.
I use it all the time.
Yeah, and they had, and actually this latest release, it fixed a couple of issues that have been bedeviling people and causing crashes. Certain BIOSes that failed to boot the app. Another issue involved FAT32 volumes. There was a bug apparently that would cause the app to choke and die. And so that's been fixed. And then there was some other little bizarre bug that involved missing elements of the interface when it was run inside VirtualBox. So anyway, so they got that. They got those things fixed. Let's see what else I got here. You know, I'm going to start following this a little bit, and it kind of falls into the KDE corner in a way, but it's also some news, and it's KDE announces the first public release of their Kirigami UI framework for mobile. And actually Kirigami, which I didn't know, I looked it up, is, it's origami, but you also use scissors.
Oh.
So obviously like that rules me out from playing with it because I can't use scissors. No. But yeah, so you fold, but then you also will do, and you've seen probably some of those very ornate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's kirigami. So anyway, but they, they're really kind of expanding, and they announced this early, they announced it earlier this year, but this is the first public release of it. So, it's a framework for, you know, mobile devices, and I'm going to be keeping an eye on this just to see what, you know, what happens, as a result of that. So, and I think that's pretty much, you covered one or two of mine, and
okay.
You did a fine job, Tom, let me tell you, as always. So, and that's it.
That's the news.
That's the news, but I do have Linux convention scene. Yes. I think we just touched on it earlier. August is kind of a slow month. However, there is, LinuxCon North America, I believe, yes, and it is at the Western Harbor Castle in, I think I stayed at that place 20 years ago. Anyway, in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Now, for a mere $800, you can attend LinuxCon and learn from the best and the brightest, who will be delivering content from leading maintainers, developers, and project leads in the Linux community. So, and who attends? Well, developers. Software developers, programmers, IT operations experts, corporate end users, media students. I don't know what student can afford $800, but it's jam-packed. And this is August 22nd through the 24th, so that's coming up in a couple weeks.
That's high for students.
It is. I suspect they probably have scholarships.
Okay.
Get a student loan. Anyway, so that's one convention this month. And... yeah, that's all. That's actually, I went kind of searching for them. That's all I could really find. September, there'll be some more.
Yeah.
As there typically is.
In Ohio, we get the Ohio Linux Fest in October, so.
Yes, we do.
Are you going to that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do. So I will be making plans to attend this year.
My wife, I think, wants to go because
did you go last year?
I went last year.
Yeah, okay.
And my wife's like, I want to go. I'm like, you don't like Linux. She goes, no, I just want to go where you're. To the shopping thing and stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, Columbus has got a lot of, they got a lot of cool areas.
So. She just hasn't been to Columbus, so she's like, I want to go. I'm like, whatever.
Yeah, she'll have a good time. She'll have a good time.
The outgoing music for this week's show.
We're good. Yeah, the music. I went searching and I threw in. My method for searching in Jamendo is to throw in two completely odd terms mm-hmm. and see what comes up. So, and so this one, and actually, I sent that to you in an email.
Yes.
But Tom, let me try to pull up my, my email because, I don't have it handy. I confess.
Let me pull it up because I saw the show stuff pulled up.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's Loading called, now. It is called Clown Diet. and I'm trying to remember the, Rod Zombie. That's the artist is Rod Zombie and, the song is, Clown's Diet. And, it's my theme of carnivals and that type of thing.
Yes.
Let's see. I don't think, are you hearing it there?
We'll insert the full link.
Thank you. I kind of liked it because I like dysfunctional,
yes,
disjointed, slightly out of tune music.
Yeah.
There's just something about it that.
I think that's why I listen to Rob Zombie. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that and the inarticulate yelling. I don't know why I like it, but.
Well, this is Rod Zombie.
Oh, Rod. I think it's Rob Zombie.
Well.
I you know what? I'm looking at it. You're right. It says something.
Yeah. So anyway, you've been. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 204. Hotter than July?
Hotter than July.
Yes, August. This is Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher Honky Magoo 5150 and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy.
And me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.